Hi, this is Lou Hayter, and you're listening to the Wasted Hour podcast.
And you're listening to the Wasted Hour podcast, the podcast about fashion, artists, inspiration, and creative culture. And I'm very happy to introduce today's guest, Lou Hayter. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Hi, Martin. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Thank you. All things considered.
We just sorted out some technical difficulties.
We did. First. We got there in the end. It only took half an hour.
And I'm really happy. Yeah. but it also gave us the time to get to know each other first.
Exactly.
And what I wanted to start first, like my first question is because you've been, I think, all your life a huge music fan. And I've heard also that you're a huge Madonna fan since you're little. What's your favorite Madonna song?
Oh, that's quite hard. What is my favorite Madonna song? I'm really into Justify My Love at the moment. It changes. Yeah. I guess all the like early Jelly Bean stuff is, you know, Borderline and stuff is where my heart is. But I'm really into Justify My Love. You know, you go through different moods, and that's the one I kind of listen to most at the moment.
Yeah, but she's one of the artists where it can change easily. What's your favorite track? Because she's done so much good stuff.
So much. I love Lucky Star as well. So the first record I bought with my own money was True Blue. And so that one always has a place in my heart, you know, because of that.
Yeah, but how do you remember the first contact you had with her? Was it like a video on TV, or did she hear the song somewhere?
Yeah, I guess it must have been on TV. I used to watch the chart show religiously, and I must have seen her on that. I mean, it's quite vague memory, but I must have seen her on that and gone out and bought it. And then I remember my mum saying, like, oh, you just spent all that money on a record. And she thought that was like quite a sort of investment, because it was like quite a lot of money for a small child. But yeah, I've still got the album, and I've actually just bought records ever since then. Just kept going with it.
Eventually you also picked up an instrument. And do you know why you like picked up an instrument? Were you forced by your parents, or what were you inspired by?
Yeah, so I've got three older siblings. So my parents had three children, and then I came along a decade later as a sort of happy accident. And I was lucky to grow up with them playing music in the 80s to me. Like, you know, my sisters listened to the Human League. Both my brothers listened to Prince and like the and, you know, whatever, really, like KLF or so it was just all around me. And we've got a piano in the house, and I would just go and start playing it. And my brother played me Eric Satie, and I wanted to learn that, and I just started playing like Gymnopédie and stuff. And then they'd buy me books, and then they sent me to lessons. And I remember the Betty Blue. I remember my brother, I was only like 5 or 6, and my brother was like, play this, and played me the Betty Blue soundtrack and got me to copy it. And then I realised I could just play what I wanted by ear. So from then on, I would just go and like copy things. And then I sort of had proper lessons and became like more classically trained. But usually it's just, I just play things by ear. And that helps me write, you know.
Yeah. And like, when did you then write your first own songs?
I used to write songs in the playground with my mates, which were awful, if I think about it. And I just never, you know, I became completely immersed in music from about the age of 12, in terms of I was buying records and listening and like taping radio shows and stuff. And then I started DJing as soon as I got to university. Sorry, I totally lost the thread then. What was the initial question?
No, because like for me as well, like I started playing piano at the age of 6, and it wasn't until like 4 to 5 years later that I started doing my own songs.
Officially write a song until I was about 24, 25. That's when because I just didn't think I could sing, and I knew I could write music, and I thought if only I could sing, I think I could write quite decent songs. But I never thought I could sing. And then I just tried and kind of worked out that you can produce your vocal to make it sound how you want with a bit of trickery. So that's when I started. I wrote this song called It Doesn't Work Like That. And that came out as my first single. As a 7-inch. And so, yeah, it wasn't probably till then that I actually, you know, really sat down and wrote a song. When I was about 24, maybe 25, I think.
So all the years before, like, besides, like, playing in bands and everything, you just, like, dived deep into music and just...
Yeah, I was DJing and playing, like, piano or whatever. And maybe.
Do you remember who you shared your musical interest with, like around like the age of like 12, 13? Because like for me back then, it was like I was so deeply into music, and like also it connected me so much with my friends.
Yeah, no, it was my brother, actually, my big brother, Tim. We'd go shopping like every weekend to Soul Jazz Records, or it's now called Sounds of the Universe. And then we started going to gigs and all that. And when I got to sort of sixth form college, I'd go to clubs like Metalheads, Goldie's Club and all of that kind of thing, Giles Peterson at Bar Roomba. I had a sort of older group of mates, because in my school, no one was really into the same stuff as me. So I've sort of found friends outside of school, and kind of went out with them more. In just up to London and stuff.
Okay. And then you joined the New Young Pony Club as a keyboarder.
I did, yeah. That was a bit of a sort of serendipitous thing, because I worked at a record label called New Phonic. So Trevor Jackson's label Output, who put out all the sort of Rapture and Moo and LCD Sound System in the UK... I worked for him, and then I started working at New Phonic, which was in the same building in Shoreditch. And I called up New Young Pony Club. They'd put a single out with them. And I said, I found you a drummer, which was Sarah Jones, who became their drummer. And Andy in the band said to me, do you know anyone that could play keyboards for us? And I was like, me? So I went straight to his house. I mean, I was in a situation where I could just sort of come and go as I pleased. So I just left the office and went to his house. And then he was like, yeah, you've got the job. So I became their keyboard player. But that's, it was total, like, luck, really.
Yeah. When was that? Like, just speaking of the time.
I'm really bad with times, but I think it was probably 2005 or 2006.
Yeah, because I remember too, it was like a whole new era for like music as well, especially like coming from the UK too. Like if just like a year before it, like something like Block Party was like really popular back then, like in Munich, and then like the Klaxons came, and like the whole more like indie rave thing started going up also with for me it was also in the same kind with like Justice coming out of like of France and everything. It was just, how would you describe the like the energy from the band back then, or the sound?
Well, it, as a, the whole scene or our band, you mean?
Both.
Because like for me, fun. It was great because all of a sudden we had, it was a bit like summer camp. So like you'd play at a festival and you'd be with like Klaxons, Hot Chip, LCD Sound System, United Block Party, CSS, and we just became like this massive crew. And every time you did shows, you'd see them. So we're all, you know, still mates now, really. And it was just a lot of fun. It was like, as you say, the whole scene blew up. And so, you know, Justice, everyone kind of interlinked, like the Ed Bang a lot in Paris. And you just see everyone wherever you went. And we had a good time for sure. Yeah, it was exciting.
Like for me, like as a consumer, it all felt also like really fresh. Like at the same time as well, because there was like a new combination of sounds for me, and also like the time when I started going out, the parties also felt different because like it was the whole Ed Banger sound and like the rave disco stuff like really felt so energetic to me, whereas before I was going out to like hip hop or to like guitar, like more indie parties, and then like it all matched together at some point, and that felt amazing.
It really did. It felt like it started a few years earlier for me, like with LCD and the Rapture and all the DFA stuff and Tiga. It was a bit more clubby, and then it kind of moved into a lot of bands sort of about 3 years later, and then went into that kind of NME thing.
How was it for you playing live?
It was funny because I kind of joined the band thinking we'd probably do a few like local gigs, and all of a sudden I was like in Australia with 10,000 people in front of me, and I have to say I get stage fright, so I was a bit like, what's going on? I remember calling my mum and being like, I don't know if I can do this. And then my manager Martin Hall, I spoke to him about it, and he was like, have a drink. So I drank a load of whiskey, and then I just never looked back. Like, every single gig, I was drunk, because it was the only way I could step out onto this. Because I find the adrenaline you have before you go on overrides the alcohol. So I didn't feel drunk at all, and I was able to play. I was playing, like, three keyboards at the same time, backing vocals, but just having a bit of, like, gave me a bit of Dutch courage. And so that was my way of getting through the stage fright, was just have a drink.
Because I think I was asking because I'm just guessing it's so hard to process, just like from what you said, like working in the record store and then like stepping out on a stage where so many people
are waiting for you. I'm a bit of an introvert in a lot of ways. I'm not with DJing, but in terms of like being on stage, I'm more of a studio nerd. The two things don't often make sense to me, to actually go out there and perform. But I, at the same time, I do love it and I do miss it. So it's it's a kind of a two-way thing for me, you know?
Yeah, I think I know what you mean, because like always like having like the fear before going on stage, it somehow turns into the fear of the fear that you're having before, you know, and then it gets like really...
Yeah, you're really nervous, and then when you're there, you love it, and you don't want to leave the stage. So it's like a double-edged sword for me. Yeah.
You mentioned like several times now that you also started DJing, and I heard that you used your student grant to buy some Technics turntables.
Yeah, I did. I got a student grant, went straight out and bought some Technics 1200s and a mixer, which I've still got. And I pretty much just DJed through my whole degree. I didn't really do any work, and just I ran like club nights every week, and that was that.
But who told you how to mix records, or how did you learn that?
Oh, I just did it myself. Yeah. Just sat around at
because
home.
I think like nowadays there are just like YouTube tutorials and like everything, and I always like I'm fascinated by if you like an autodidact, like just by learning how to match vinyls and putting them together.
Yeah, no, there was, I mean, yeah, we didn't have YouTube then, so I just spent hours at home DJing, and you know, so it just comes naturally, I suppose, after that amount of time.
And besides like the DJing, after the New York Pony Club, you also did Tomorrow's World.
Yes.
In like a few years later, with Jean Benoit from the band Air.
Yeah.
I have to ask, because I'm a huge fan of the album. How did that come together?
Oh, thank you. Again, it was a really lucky kind of meeting. So Alex, who occasionally played drums in New Young Pony Club for us, if Sarah was busy or whatever, he was drumming for Air, and he played, Jean Benoit said he was looking for a singer, and he played him my solo stuff, which is called The New Sins, and I just got an email from Jean Benoit saying he'd like to make some music. So obviously I was like over the moon, because I'm a huge fan of Air since day one. And so I went to Paris and met him. He came to my gig, and then we went to his house and just played each other kind of influences of ours, and got in the studio, and like within 3 days we kind of got three tunes, and every time I went back to Paris we'd make another three, and then we were like, oh, we've got an album.
Amazing.
So he didn't even intend to do a full album with me, but we just worked so quickly together. So yeah, it came together really fast.
Cool. What did you take away from that period, or from making that album?
For starters, I love working with JB. So I was, I was just very grateful to be working with him. I mean, he's incredible in the studio. He's an incredible musician. The studio itself is stunning. So I was constantly learning, you know, from just being with him. We had to kind of put an album together. I think every time you go in the studio, you learn. So I just generally kind of... We've now made a second album, actually. But it took ages, because they had a 20 or 25-year tour of Air. So everything got slowed down. So now I feel like I've learned even more from him than... Obviously, the first album was almost 10 years ago. So I've made two records with him, and I learned so much from him. I mean, his work ethic, for starters, is like he's in the studio every day, all day, and he works fast, and you have to make decisions very, very, because I can take a lot of time making records, and he, you know, you have to really, really think fast when you work with JB. Like, you know, we start making a tune, and then he's like, right, what's the song? And you have to come up with that song there and then, pretty much, or overnight. And we make decisions just like really, really quickly. So I learned that from him, to work fast and think fast, you know, rather than if it was me, I'd probably take like, you know, weeks to make decisions about things. He's a very good friend of mine, but I also really admire him. So I do take on board what he's doing the whole time, you know?
Yeah. But I can tell that you, learned a lot, because then when you put out your first solo stuff, it sounds amazing too.
Thank you.
I think in 2018 you released, Cherry on Top.
That's right.
Which was like, yeah. That was like 2 years ago. And then in August of this year, you released My Baby Just Cares For Me. And I have to ask, then is it that there is an album in the works?
Oh, yeah, the album's finished. Yeah, the album's ready to go.
Okay.
I'm just, today, actually, I just got the masters through. So I literally just have to approve the masters and then it's all finished.
How does it feel?
It feels really great, actually. And having my team as well, having... So I signed to Skint, which is part of BMG, and having them and my management, and I just really like the people I work with. So it feels really nice. We've got a good little unit. And and I'm really, really happy with the album. I love it. So yeah, it's exciting.
How long did it take to finish the album?
Oh, I mean, do you know what? It's like, I was doing music sort of in between touring and DJing five nights a week. I financed everything myself. So like now, if I want to go in the studio, it's all it's all organized and paid for. I was having to sort of rely on people's time and pay for everything. And sometimes it would just be like the person I'm working with isn't free for 2 weeks and then I'm on tour and then I'm DJing here, there and everywhere. And I'd get like 2 days a month in the studio. So it's taken ages, like years. But because of that, like, now I'm hoping I'll have the luxury of like block booking weeks in the studio and working fast. But because I haven't had that before, and I've just done everything myself, it's taken a really long time. Yeah.
Yeah. When I listen to lists of songs for me, there's like a lot of vintage acid, 80s, R&B. Is it hard for you to combine like all your influences or the stuff that you want to put out?
No, I find it easy. I think everything I do is informed by what I listen to. So I think sometimes people might want me to make a bit of a more cohesive record and I actually can't because I listen to so many different things. So it's easier for me to put loads of stuff from different areas in than it is to stick to one thing. I could put more, you know, I could probably do. I have so many ambitions to do different types of albums as well, because I like, you know, I'd like to do a sort of minimal classical record one day or whatever. And so, yeah, it's hard to get everything I want to do out of me because the process is slow. But I find it easy to sort of get different things out, if you know what I mean.
Totally, yeah. Then sometimes like it just pours like everything, like the music comes into you, you digest it and put it out in other songs as well. And that's also for me, the visual from the video from my baby is also for me like kind of that with like the whole, which is brilliant, the video, the whole collage thing as well.
Yeah, I saw Alice's stuff and I just thought it was like the perfect representation of what I was doing, because with that track I found a sample and I cut it up and played around with it. So that's kind of what the video is. It's like cut up collage stuff kind of thing.
Yeah. You also did like with DJing, besides doing like a lot of club nights as well, I read that you also did a lot of DJ work for the British Fashion Awards and also for catwalk shows as well. So I'm really curious how, like, when you do like or select the music for like a catwalk show, like how long does it take for you, or is it, do you see the clothes first, or how does it work?
Often you don't have much time, because I think music can be a bit of an afterthought for a lot of designers. So then they'll be like, right, let's get the music done. You might have like 2 weeks or a week or 3 days to do it. And also a lot of it goes through committee. So sometimes I've been in situations where the night before the show, I'm still waiting for the stylist and the designer to sign off on ideas. And if there's tracks they don't like, you're like working right up till the show goes out on changing stuff and suggesting new things for them. So sometimes you don't have much time at all. You have to kind of like think on your feet, you know.
Yeah. But how did you make the connection to the fashion world?
I think when I was in the band, I would get asked to DJ for labels like Mew Mew or whatever. And so I kind of made those connections with PRs and labels back then, and I've been DJing for them ever since. So it just was a kind of a natural progression.
Yeah. How can one imagine like the fashion events where you DJ?
How can you imagine them?
Yeah, because like for a lot of people, like they don't know, they're just like they hear about those fashion events, and it also sounds like.
Oh, okay.
It's not the first thing that you connect like a DJ who's also doing like a lot of club nights, being like at a fashion party as well.
Yeah, I mean, I ended up doing more fashion parties than anything else. I mean, I can only imagine myself now because. We're all in lockdown, but they used to be so fun. I miss them. Yeah, they're good. You know, you see all your mates there, and it's glamorous. It's fun.
Yeah. Did you also like your style of fashion, how you styled changed because you worked so much into fashion as well? Did you get inspired by that?
Yeah, absolutely. And you get given clothes and things like that. So, yeah, I've kind of, you're around fashion all the time. So you'll see things that you like when you're at a show or out and about at parties and things. Definitely.
Yeah. Do you remember like the first more expensive thing that you've bought like regarding fashion? Because I'm asking, I was mentioning before that I was working for Acne Studios, and for me back then I was like saving my money for like 5 or 6 months to buy a jacket back then, which I saw online.
Yeah.
Like it was for me the best thing when I was like 20, and then to go into there and buy like my first kind of designer jacket. And
yeah.
That was like the step into fashion for me.
I love Acne stuff. It's really great, their stuff. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I do spend a lot of money on clothes, but I don't on like one piece so much. But I do love Prada shoes. That's my weakness. So probably the like first expensive thing I bought was some Prada shoes. And I just wear them all the time. So that's my thing. I'll always have a nice pair of shoes, a nice handbag, nice coat, and then the rest you can kind of mix it up. But I'm lucky because I get given really nice stuff too. So I don't always have to spend a fortune on it, you know.
What I always wanted to know is how do you work it out when you're like on tour? Because like space is limited, I guess, when you're traveling, and how do you look so
I'm
good
awful.
Always like being on stage?
I have so much stuff. People would be like, you bought all this stuff for the weekend. And I'm like, yeah, but you never know. Because you got to go out in the day. You've got to go out at night. You need this, that and the other. I'm really, really bad at packing light. So, yeah, you'll see me on the Eurostar with about 3 suitcases for a week or something like that. Struggling. Yeah,
because you have to be dressed for every occasion.
You do, exactly. You know, you're in the studio and then you might be DJing at a posh thing or a live show even, and then you need like a stage outfit, something for after the show, blah. And then you never know what mood you'll be in, so you need another option. Or the weather. I'm really, really bad at packing. I get jealous. You know, you see someone with just like one bit of hand luggage, and they sort of breeze off the plane, and I've got like 3 massive suitcases.
Yeah, I don't know how people do that. Like, I have like a lot of suitcases always too, because like I'll be like, oh, perhaps I need this, perhaps I need that. Oh, I have to take this
exactly.
With me. So it always ends up with 2 suitcases as well.
Totally.
What I also wanted to ask, because you have. I'm just guessing that you have like a deeper connection to London as well. And like, do you have a favorite place or area in the city?
Do I do that? I certainly, you're right, I do have a deep connection here, and like having the luxury of like toured around the world, I always felt like this is my home and I love being here. Favourite sport, I guess East is where all my mates are, so and I feel connected more to this community. So yeah, East London for me, but I'm from South London, so that obviously has a big place in my heart. And and then the West End is like where I go out a lot and have a lot of fun. So, and that's the kind of heady, you know, exciting part of London for me. So I love Soho and all of that, central London.
Yeah, because you've spent like so much time and had so many experiences in London as well, can you say how the city has changed in like the past 10 to 15 years?
Yeah, I guess it has. Yeah, I mean, East London itself has really, really changed, and it's become like Shoreditch and Dalston stuff was a very kind of creative area, and now it's just Shoreditch is like media and sort of money now, and the nightlife's become, it's kind of like a big stag do or hen do around here. So yeah, it's really, really changed, and everyone's moved further out to like Stoke Newington or Clapton or something like that. So it's kind of the scene's kind of grown outwards, I'd say. But it's harder to find a little base for parties, you know. It's kind of more spread out.
Like besides of like the current situation, but like you just said that you've been on tour like a lot and you always love coming back to London. But imagine you're at the airport right now and you would be given a free flight. Where would you go to and why?
Oh, I'd probably go to a desert island. Right now, maybe I'd go to like Jamaica or something.
Okay.
Barbados. And why? Oh, I'd love to just sit in the sun on the beach and chill out. I did manage to sneak in a holiday to Croatia, and it was so amazing that time. Yeah, just to be out of London, and it felt as though you were free of the virus for a week, because they don't really have much COVID there in the first place. And we were in this kind of remote area, just like running around, being free. So yeah, it was like the perfect holiday at that time.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, so it really was.
Hopefully it would be like that everywhere, somewhere in the near future as well. And I'm looking forward to that. And what I'm also looking very much forward to is your album and like the next outputs that you're having. And
thank you.
I'm really thank you so much for taking the time to walk us a little bit through your history and your music as well. And yeah, I wish you all the best for your upcoming projects.
You too. Thanks. It's been really nice to talk to you.